Welcome to Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. Each gubernatorial election, Utah Foundation undertakes the Utah Priorities Project, where Utah Foundation issues a series of surveys targeting voters, candidates, and party delegates in order to understand what issues matter most to Utah voters and help voters understand which candidates are best aligned with their individual preferences. The latest edition of this survey, using data gathered in 2024, represents 20 years' worth of research into what issues matter most to Utah voters. In this edition of Utah Thrives, Thomas Young interviews Utah Foundation President Sean Tigan and Research Director Christopher Collard about the results of the 2024 Priorities Project.
All right, Sean, it's good to be with you again. How are you doing?
I am doing so great. Thanks for joining us today and having this nice conversation.
You released a report at the end of April on the top priorities of voters. And the top five were housing affordability, politicians listening to voters, earning enough money to pay for non-housing needs, government overreach, and partisan politics. Are there any of these that are surprising to you?
The first two aren't a surprise. We actually saw those two, the housing affordability and the politicians listening to voters. We saw those concerns come up from voters just before the pandemic in 2020. So they're not much of a surprise, though it is a surprise that those five, when you kind of break it down, the first and third one look at the cost of living, and the second, fourth, and fifth ones speak to political dysfunction. So it is surprising that those two issues take the top five spots in terms of the priorities of Utah voters this year, which means to me that those are clearly what's on top of voters' minds, what politicians and other folks need to really pay attention to and take action on.
Boy, I thought it was fascinating that government overreach was in the top five. I think there's a group of voters that feel left out.
Voters overall, and maybe the Utahns overall, are thinking, you know what? What is going on here? Like, why are they passing bills that get people mad? And why are they talking about tax reform and sales tax on food? And why are they overturning the ballot initiatives back in 2018. And so I think there are a lot of people that are like kind of mad about those issues. And that government overreach, I guess you could say, kind of flows into the other 16 issues on this list of 17 that we polled people on. I think you can think about it in terms of abortion and women's rights. And you can think about it in terms of perhaps air quality or water issues or growth or transgender rights and access. And so I think it flows over into a lot of different ways. And that's maybe why for folks that are, I don't know, for lack of a better word, disenfranchised, they raise that up as an issue that's really of a big concern.
I think if you look at the things that are on the top of people, top of the list, they're things that concern everybody in the state. And that's kind of why they made it to the top of the list. Like housing affordability, the cost of living, like those are things that impact everybody. But the interesting thing is with those two issues, everybody's coming at it from the same side. Like everybody feels housing's too expensive, groceries are too expensive. But with these other political issues, like politicians listening to voters or government overreach or partisan politics, they all kind of put it high on their list, but they're also coming at it from different directions. So when we looked at, one of the things we looked at early on was how these issues relate to each other. To no surprise, there was a strong tie between housing affordability and the cost of living. You know, the three environmental issues like the Great Salt Lake and air quality and water quality all tied together a lot. The one thing that was interesting was with government overreach, it kind of spanned the different groups. So you had both conservatives feeling like government overreach was a problem and Democrats feeling like government overreach was a problem. But they were coming at it from very different reasons.
And I think, you know, just to jump on a point that Christopher was making about, like, affecting a lot of people's lives, we do this initial survey to figure out what goes on the list. So we've got this list of 17 things that we do some sophisticated analysis and figure out what the priorities are of folks. But before we do that, we ask a couple open-ended questions about what people's concerns are for state and local government. And some people will say, oh, it's too many new apartments in my neighborhood and all this traffic. And that's something they look out their window and they see happening in their neighborhoods every day. And so that's like, that's what's top of mind. That's what makes me mad. And so it affects a few people, but really in how many communities is that happening? And how many communities are we really having the effects of that? And when you pair that up against, so when we ask people what your priorities are, we only give folks four questions, four things to choose from, instead of a whole list of 17. It'd be impossible for our brains to kind of handle and rank a list like that. So we give them four questions, say, what's the most important thing? What's the least important, the least concern for you? And that can be this crowded neighborhood or something, isn't that big of a deal when it comes to, you know what, people can't afford homes, or politicians aren't listening to me, or we don't have maybe enough water in Lake Powell. So that some of those other things really rise to the top.
When I was looking at the government, just back to the government overreach one, breaking it down by education group, voters that have less than a bachelor's degree tend to rank that higher than voters that have, say, a bachelor's degree, master's, or doctorate. Is there some story there?
I think one possible explanation is people with higher degrees, especially advanced degrees beyond a bachelor's degrees, in some ways they have the most access to politicians. So maybe because they're in a position where they can get the access they want from politicians, maybe they feel more heard from the politicians because they have the resources or the time to be able to talk to them. Maybe they don't feel like that's as important of an issue.
It's hard to say on some of these things perhaps why they are prioritizing things one way or another. I think you can see with some items, you know, we asked about income. People with higher incomes are less concerned about cost of living. And so it's like, oh yeah, that's pretty easy to explain, and you don't need to look at the additional survey questions and analyze those first. But some of those other ones are, it is a little bit trickier. One of the things that you can explain are, I think pretty easily, are the differences when you look at ideology or political party affiliation. You see the biggest differences of any of those demographic groups when you look at like Democrats and Republicans. Interestingly, or maybe not interestingly, maybe obviously, you see this unaffiliated folks somewhere right in between those two groups that have very different priorities. There are a few things that are similar for those Republicans and those Democrats, but there are also some items that are very different. They look very different in terms of their priorities.
On that issue, Democratic priorities, number one is women's rights. I don't think that's mentioned for independents or Republicans, right?
Not on the top 10 list. It's not anywhere near. And there's a, you know, to get nerdy, there's a statistically significant difference between that issue for Democrats and the unaffiliated and the Republicans. I mean, I was surprised that was at the top of the list. Christopher, I think when I said, I was surprised, he said, why? He's not quite as surprised. But I just found it that, I mean, there's a lot of important stuff out there. And it is interesting to me to see that that's the thing that beat out all of these other items, like housing affordability, like cost of living, like political dysfunction. And maybe it ties in some ways with political dysfunction, government overreach, that sort of thing. But it was to see that highlighted and chosen as a top issue was pretty interesting to me.
I think sometimes issues that take on a national focus, you know, bring a lot of attention. And so right now, ever since the Supreme Court passed the Dobbs case, abortion and women's rights has been a topic constantly in the news since then. On the other side of the spectrum, immigration, the immigration crisis at the border going on right now is also a national issue that's dragged in a lot of attention. And it's pretty high on the Republicans' list as well. But one thing about that I thought was really interesting about abortion and women's rights is a lot of some issues, they have a lot of agreement. People agree that these are mostly kind of in this area. For example, K-12 education, it was ranked around 7th place. And there's a lot of agreement. Most people were kind of putting this around somewhere between 5 and 8, you know, giving it a good right there in 7th place. Abortion, on the other hand, was out of the 17 issues, abortion was the one that had the biggest spread. You had lots of people who thought it was super important. You had lots of people who thought it was the least important, and you had lots of people in the middle. So it kind of had the widest spread, which kind of ended up, it averaged out in the middle spectrum. So while Democrats thought this was the most important issue, they do only represent about 15% of the voter population. And so when everybody else's vote is also counted in, it ends up much lower overall.
Immigration was like that too, Christopher, is that right?
Yeah, immigration was another issue like that that had a very widespread.
Yeah, it's where Republicans were like, immigration, and Democrats were like, immigration? No. Why is that an issue?
Boy, partisanship shows up. So Democrats rank partisanship high, independents have partisanship high, but Republicans, who cares about that? Like, yeah. We're okay.
Can I speak for Christopher? He brought this up previously. One of these issues, and I just think this is neat. I brought this up earlier today. From Christopher's perspective, is that it's like, yeah, partisanship is terrible if you're on the losing side. If you don't like how one party has a lot of power and can do whatever they want, then you're concerned about it. But if you're unaffiliated or if you're a Democrat, then you're like, I hate this partisanship. I wish we could all get together and pass things together. And it's like, yeah, sure you do, because you don't have any power. You would like to, if you were in power, Democrats or unaffiliated, you would probably think partisanship is fine. We can pass everything we want, and the poor Republicans can't get their way. So I think that's kind of an interesting one.
Are you surprised that K-12 education is not in the top five for any of the groups? What would be the cause of that?
That was definitely one of the things that we found quite surprising. Historically, if we go back from like 2004 through 2016, K-12 education was always among the top three issues. There was a weird spot in early 2020 where it wasn't, but then post-pandemic again, with the concern about returning to school during a pandemic again, K-12 education was one of the top three issues. And so having it now drop down to seventh is definitely really interesting.
I think that, like, when Christopher looked at this list, the first thing that popped into his mind on those first top five items that you brought up, one and three, cost of living, two, four, and five, political dysfunction. So if you look at those and you think about those top five issues as actually two issues, cost of living and political dysfunction, then, you know, education is fourth. So maybe it's not that far down the list. It just so happens that these items have the same kind of feeling for some people. And so it beats out education every time. People don't think that education is unimportant. They just think it's somewhere in the middle. I mentioned earlier, you've got those four items to choose from where you choose the most important and the least important. I have a feeling for a lot of people, I mean, data bear this out, second and third for a lot of people. It's maybe just right behind that first highly important issue, which is housing affordability, which is, you know, inflation stuff. And so it's still important to people. But I think that perhaps, you know, there's been some talk in recent legislative sessions about vouchers, but there has been a lot of money going into education. And ultimately, we're probably, as Utahns, as Americans, as people on earth, concerned about education, and we want to have the best for our kids and kids down the street and Utahns across the state. But at the same time, you know, there are some maybe more palpable concerns that we need to fix right now, and then we'll spend more of our time again in 2028 or whatever, focusing on education. Hopefully there's no pandemic we have to deal with, or massive housing shortage, or, you know, whatever else is going on. And maybe people will be happy with, maybe we'll figure out how to turn this political dysfunction into some kind of political nirvana or something, and we can focus on some of these issues that affect everybody, like education and water quality and the environment in that way.
And I guess another issue that's kind of similar to education is healthcare. And so in past editions of the survey, healthcare was always a top five issue. But this time when we reached out in our initial survey, we got very few people even identifying it as a major problem for the governor to address. So it didn't even make it onto the final list. And that was also kind of an interesting finding, thinking about what's not on this list.
Yeah, you've got this cost of living that's gone way up. But one thing that hasn't gone crazy over the past couple of years is the healthcare costs. And maybe without that being in the news and without Medicaid expansion and all the talk about Obamacare and all this, all these different issues, maybe it's just like, oh yeah, healthcare doesn't come to mind at all. And perhaps if we'd switched the methodology a little bit and snuck healthcare in, maybe it would have shown up somewhere in the middle or on the bottom part of this list of 17 that made the final cut. But it's still, it is shocking to me that healthcare, people just didn't talk about it. People talked more about guns and religious freedoms and that sort of thing that also didn't make this list of 17 than they did about healthcare. Healthcare just wasn't really a concern for people this round.
Boy, fascinating. I want to ask you about housing affordability. So it's number one for unaffiliated and Republicans, and it shows up as number five for Democrats. There's something there that's where there's no solution, right? There are trade-offs, but never solutions. And when you look at the demographic interest in housing affordability, it drops off for the older generation. If you're above 65, there's a good chance you have your house paid off, right? So a push to make housing more affordable for you as above 65 voter, that is code for your house is worth too much, your wealth is
if you bought your house 10 years ago or whatever, it's like, does it affect you directly?
No.
You know, it doesn't really. It's like, I mean, you're not paying increased rents and you're not looking for a house in a time of relatively high mortgage interest rates, and you're not buying homes that have gone up in price by 200% over the last 8 years or whatever it is. For those older generations, like you said, a lot of those folks probably own homes and they're thinking about other things. And I think even for Democrats, it's a big deal for Democrats too. It's just that women's rights and abortion access are important, and air quality is important, and this partisanship thing is really stuck in my craw. And so it's housing affordability is still important, but it's just that it's just behind some of these other items that are really sticking up. But you were going
to
say
something. And housing affordability isn't important just for people who are trying to get into houses, who are currently renting and trying to get into the housing market. But the current housing market also makes it harder for people to switch when they want to move, when they're feeling a desire to move to a different place for a job, or maybe their life circumstances change, or they just need an upgrade. Right now, most people have a low interest rate, and if they even use their higher equity to swing into a different house, they're going to end up paying a much higher interest rate. So a lot of people just feel stuck where they currently are, and that's something that's going to affect older homeowners as well. I mean, even though among those who are 65 and older, housing is still one of their top issues. It's just not the top issue like it was for every other age group.
But it's an issue for everybody. I mean, it's an issue for me. Like, I own a house, but my teenager doesn't. And is she ever going to be able to live in the state of Utah? Or is she going to have to live in Cincinnati or somewhere where you can buy a house for less than $500,000, yeah, which is insane
she's
amount of money.
Going to Missouri or Ohio?
Right.
Or Alabama.
Yeah. I mean, there are a few places where when you look at housing costs, we had a little post about this a month or so ago. When you look at housing costs, Utah costs increased faster than every other state in the nation over the past 30 or so years. And the Salt Lake City metropolitan area, so the larger area that goes into Davis County and Twill and whatnot, that area has increased faster than any other metropolitan area in the country. And there are a couple that are close, like Denver and Austin, but there aren't many that are close. And the next round behind that group, behind Salt Lake and a couple other places, they're way behind. So it's a whole other world than it was 30 years ago. There was probably a point when in Salt Lake or in St. George or in Bountiful where you like that, we want to move and it's going to be expensive to move to almost every state. But now it's like, you know what? Maybe it's going to be expensive to move to Texas or California or Washington, or Florida, but most places are going to be pretty affordable. Most places now, because of our the equity that maybe those homeowners that have been living in homes for the last 20 years, now you have a little bit more flexibility, but your kids don't and your grandkids don't. And where are they going to live? Maybe in your basement or who knows?
In the survey, you asked whether voters wanted more single-family homes, multifamily, or some other, right? There was some question that tried to gain insight into the type of housing, right?
It's possible that it's coming out in the next report.
Sure. But we do have some data on that.
Right.
What was our middle housing finding, Sean?
People want, in terms of our middle housing series, people want homes that look like single family. They in their neighborhoods, they want homes that look like single family. They don't have to be single family. They can be duplexes or fourplexes or whatever. But as long as they're kind of the same scale and they kind of fit with the neighborhood, then they're fine with it. What they don't want in their neighborhood is, here I live in a community with a lot of single family homes. I don't want at the corner a 20 unit apartment or even an 8 unit apartment if it's a big square block that doesn't fit with the rest of the neighborhood.
So I often hear supply is the answer. And when I looked at metro areas and which metro areas saw increased density, correlating that with prices, home prices, there was almost no relationship. And you'd think that with more density, existing single family homes would maybe go down. But really the opposite happened. What are your thoughts on the housing affordability issue? There's no easy answer, and the trade-offs have entrenched groups with where someone is a winner and someone is a loser. This past session, $300 million went towards subsidizing developers to build homes that are in like the 350,000 range. So if you're a person that can get into one of those homes, you're getting a below market house. You're a winner from this policy, but it probably won't have any effect on the broader market. Right? So
I guess it's a good question. You're certainly a winner if you get, you know, if you get into one of those places. It's just like rental assistance. If you get one of the vouchers, then you're a winner. If you're on the waiting list, then you're hoping to be a winner. You're hoping to get on the lottery at some point. But ultimately, I think that policy alone isn't gonna put the 35,000 or whatever houses that Utah is short into the market. I think it probably is a lot of policies that may help out certain groups disproportionately. You brought up this thing about density. There's a great Urban Institute study on this where they looked at markets across the nation and looked at a whole host of different policies. And they see, but for the most part, density itself doesn't bring prices down or slow the increase in prices. But if you can get enough houses in, that's, I think, a different question than density. They're kind of the same, because where are you going to put those houses? You might have to stack them up a little bit. You might have to put them on small lots. But at the end of the day, density is probably not going to do what you need to do. It's going to be a whole bunch of policies. So if you can put enough houses out there that houses are on the market for whatever the healthy number is, 30 days or whatever the case may be, then maybe you'll have less of an upward pressure on homes, particularly, like I said, when mortgage interest prices, rates come back down.
Also, like affordability, there's a lot of factors that go into housing affordability. The prices of houses is one. Also, another big factor of that is interest rates. But also, on the flip side of the coin, housing, like, things can be more affordable if Utah's income increases. And that is a little bit more promising. Over the past 7 years, Utah has been among the top 10 states with a growing personal income every year for the past 10 years. And if you look at it collectively, we're number one in the nation in terms of personal income growth. So while there might be some threat, or it might be hard to address in terms of just building a way out of it, another avenue or part of the solution could also be earning your way out of an affordability crisis.
And you brought this up, Thomas, the idea that starter homes, if you can find a home that, okay, maybe this is this has a carport, and maybe it's 1,200 square feet, and maybe it's on a tenth of an acre, but it's, you know, $300,000. If I wanted something that was my dream home, my forever home, maybe that would cost me $600,000. But, you know, maybe that's a step you get to later. I mean, there are a lot of factors. And I like this idea of earning your way out of it. Utah also, it used to be that we had some pretty low wages compared to the rest of the nation. Now we look more and more, it seems like every year we're looking more and more like the rest of the
US. We're not competitive. We used to be on the low end of wages, right? And a financial company in New York could say, hey, we're going to set up shop in Utah. We can pay someone $70,000 versus paying someone in New York $300,000. But now wages in Utah are above the average, and it doesn't spell good.
Utah might not be competitive as a state in terms of competitive wages, but it's sure nice for me to be earning higher wages.
And I'm going to say something really bad. Maybe it's good also because those low wages bring perhaps unsustainable growth. And if you can slow that down a little bit, maybe you can get a handle on building enough homes for people. And maybe that slows down to a little bit more of a, you know, a lot of cities need as much growth as they can to pay for services. But for state at large in some of these neighborhoods where people brought up, we talked earlier about crowded neighborhoods, maybe they'll be happy with a little bit of a slowing of some of that growth, perhaps, if it actually works. I mean, people still want to live here because it's awesome. It's a great state. It's beautiful, and there are a lot of great amenities, and there are a lot of great things to do, and so people want to come here. You know, our quality of life is down. So this report, one of the things we found is for the first time, over half of Utah voters say that their quality of life is worse than it was 5 years ago, which is astounding to me, because Christopher pointed this out. That includes when we asked this question during the pandemic and when we asked this question in 2010 during the Great Recession. People were happier about their quality of life compared to the previous 5 years at that point than they are now, which is it's shocking to me. I don't know if I'm a Pollyanna here or what, but it's like it's got to get better. And is it that bad? But maybe it is, and maybe it is especially because people are concerned about the cost of living and political dysfunction.
There's a part of me that was like, boy, it's that low? It's only 60%. I've done some in California where it's like 85-90% of voters, Republican and Democrat, think that the state's going in the wrong direction.
Across the US it's about 80%. So it's like we're doing better, but is doing better good?
Utah's always been positive. Well,
we've always been positive, but
whenever we've brought this question up, it almost always it's like a majority of Utahns are happy with the what direction we're headed in. Like we've had a lot of good direction.
But now we're unhappy.
Now we're unhappy.
And what is that?
It's all those Californians.
What's going on there? Yeah, right. It's all those Californians. They were all depressed when they were in California, and then they come here and they bring our optimism down as well with them.
Can I ask you?
We're just kidding here.
I want to ask you one more question before we got to go. Can you tease out from the survey then, like, I don't know. I've heard some banner out that maybe we're becoming more ungovernable by the day, you know?
We're getting surly. Everybody's getting more surly and more partisan rancor. And
that shows up in the survey results.
That shows up in the survey results, yeah. Mm. Certainly. Yeah, that's certainly possible. We're ending on a sad note here.
Well, what I mean, the survey, it kind of is a little bit of a downer. I mean, look at the title of our report. Utahns are priced out and fed up.
Christopher came up with that title, and I said, yes, that's what this is about. I mean, this is the most depressing Utah Priorities Project survey and results that we've ever had by far. It's just depressing. I thought that the pandemic iteration was bad, but this blows it away. It's like people are priced out and fed up.
And the easy answer is just to have a deep recession. That brings prices down. I would love to know. That fixes it. But
yeah. Mm. I would love to know what the answer is. I mean, I think it's a lot of little things.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You have been listening to Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. In the coming weeks and months, Utah Foundation will be reaching out to many of the candidates running for office and asking them about the issues that matter most to Utah voters. To learn more about the Utah Priorities Project and what issues matter most to Utah voters, please visit utahfoundation.org.